Well, I have this opportunity. To share the progress on this ongoing investigation that is funded by the Alexander Foundation, and so we've been working since the first version we started this journey, and we're going to be sharing some of the progress made by this investigation. And this representation is only with a kitten brain tomography, and it's not going to bring into the table any genetic information, but we will see that much of this information is going to be crucial in these genetics and other comparisons within the equation. So this is the context in which this investigation was launched, and pretty much the context for this series of workshops, right? We know that the Southern residents have seen less than 100 individuals and an average of 85 in the last decade, and where the Northern residents have been generally increasing with 268 individuals at the end of 2011. And then other studies, previous studies, found interesting correlations between either way, like the rates and machine values. So this was the only slide that I could present in the workshop at one, and I'm basically presenting the framework. So we're dealing with a demographic framework, and it's given the high quality of the data that we have for killer whales, and this kind of a demographic models are strong mathematical tools, right? And that allows us to develop this kind of perturbation analysis in which I will provide more detail. So for this particular presentation, we're not dealing with the right side of this process, which is the incorporation of interaction between genomics and animals. And just a brief note about the perturbation analysis. There are three main components of this analysis. And this is very common in conservation biology and pest control. And, but the prospective analysis basically looks at how individual vital rates, and when we talk about vital rates, we are referring to the kind of things of biology. And so how changes in these vital rates are going to be the long-term population growth. So that's a prospective. We're talking about the potential for change. Then the retrospective part is mostly uses a technique that is called a life table response experiments, and it looks at the influence of the variation of the vital rates on the observed variance in population growth. So this looks retrospective. And then we have the transient dynamics, which don't refer to the killer whale transient. This is just as opposed to asymptotic dynamics, right? And I will not go into details about the transient dynamics part, but I will give you some of the results, right? And of course, I will be open to any kind of question. So this is our basic model. It's an stage structure model where we have basically the probabilities of surviving, the probabilities of moving from one stage to the next, and the fecundity rates, right? We divided the life stage into seven life stages, given the availability of data and what makes sense given the life history of this particular population. Now, all of this information, which is lots of information, populates this projection matrix, which is what we use to do both the prospective and the retrospective evaluation. Now, the largest, I apologize for the jargon here, but I cannot think of another word. The largest agent value of this matrix is lambda. And lambda basically represents the potential for population growth given all the detailed information by the rates. So from now on, I will refer to lambda and population growth on this thing. And also, just to make our lives easier, I will use female 1 to represent the young reproductive females, female 2 the old, female 3 the post reproductive females, male 1 the young males, and male 2 the old males. It's easier for when it comes to showing figures and data. So this lambda population will vary. And just a little bit more of detail, and then we move into more precise results. It's just to make the distinction between matrix elements, these P's, G's, and F's that I identified before. They are actually composites of vital rates, right? Here, vital rates are survival, fatality, the transition probability from one stage to the other, and sex ratio represented by the proportion of the matrix. So just to help us to make this matrix elements and matrix elements are composites. And of course, and we incorporate the uncertainty around and the variability around those vital rates. For the perturbation analysis, we extract the vital rates from log normal and beta distributions. And for the retrospective perturbation analysis, we break down the matrix in order to identify the contributions to the variance from the vital rates. We use this methodology that is called light-table responses. We also explore alternative models like this one in which we can identify sex at birth. There are some pros and cons of using this model because it reduces the time series, right? Because we can all identify sex within the bodies are of a given age. So we have to discount earlier keys from the time series. And we also explore models represented by fields on many demographic models that we can see out there. Represent female demography. So we chose this particular period, 87 to 2011, for various reasons, right? First than anything, the demographic data for this particular period is based on direct observations as opposed to reconstruction, right? The farther back you go into the time series, the more uncertainty exists and more assumptions were made to reconstruct those alien years of the. And so we also wanted to minimize the influence of the 62-73 live capture fishery population structure, especially because that fishery wasn't random, right? It was focusing mostly juveniles and young males. So we can see later on how this actually produced an anomalous population structure that it will make unfair to use that sort of population structure to represent future population growth. We also wanted to represent at least one generation. This is a very solid metric in long-lived mammals. So 25 years has been identified by other studies, and this study as the approximate time, generation time. So at the end, the compromise was to use our best quality data and also to represent at least one generation. And that's, those are the reasons why it's 87. By the way, 75% of the individuals that are alive in 2011, they were born during that period. So we thought that we were representing a very representative. So the results from these pure demographic models is that there is very variability in vital rate in the southern basins, like in the northern basins. And we know that variability in vital rates always translates into lower population variability. We also found, and what we are presenting here, statistically significant results. We found lower calf survival in the southern basin than in the northern basin, and also lower fatality for other females in the southern basin. And so those are the main demographic differences that we found. And of course, this sort of translated into lower life expectancy from the southern basin. Now, I noticed this morning that there was a mention about covariation between the vital rates of the northern residents and southern residents. But really, for this particular period, and under that particular stage structure, there is no really amazing covariation between northern residents and southern residents. We are including here the abundance, and so there is no great covariation, right? This is a correlation coefficient of 0.1. The greatest one, of course, for the main two, which are the old names, right? The survival of these is a great population. Now, when we try to represent how the current state distribution is going to behave in the future if we assume constant conditions, right? What we call this stable stage distribution. What we see here is that the northern basins in the present are closer to the stable stage distribution. What we have at zero years, that would be the current stage distribution. So the more change we see as we move ahead in the future, the more change we see, we can conclude that things are going to be very changed to accomplish or to meet this stability. So the northern residents are closer to that particular stage distribution, and the southern residents, they are there is more movement in the cities. Other things that we found is that there is a higher proportion of juveniles in the northern residents, and a higher proportion of possible adults in the southern residents. So just trying to bring some evidence of the effect of the light capture. This is how the projections for the stable stage distribution are from the years after the light capture, 73, 76, right? And if we follow, for example, the world reproductive females here, we can see how out of whack it is compared to what we were saying before. And as we move further into the time series, 77, 81, there is a greater tendency for stability there. And this is 72, 86. So this is a strong evidence how the population structure at the end of the life capture fishing, it was completely different because it affected specifically juveniles. So in terms of population growth, what we found using that particular period is that the southern residents are actually in a very mild decline of 0.91%. So this is different to what had been found before because of the different time series that we use. And that we also found that the maximum length of the time horizon for projections, right, it will be 35 years. And this is something that we extracted from this analysis of transgenic animals. And for the northern residents, lambda value is 1.65 annually, and the minimum length that we should use for population variability analysis to conclude that should be 20 years. So this is just a plot showing the relationship between the time series length versus uncertainty. So that's the time series that we use, 87, 2011. As we say, 75% of individuals alive today were born. Then this is another period that had been used for previous estimations of lambda. And as we can see, when we include that time series, it is more appreciated that tendency to increase. So, but if we go further back and we include, for example, individuals prior to the live fishing, I just drop a line for simplicity there, but 48 individuals were extracted from the southern resident population according to Peter Olesio. And so we could have gone that way and identify a greater decline in population growth, but really there is a compromise between the quality of the data and the uncertainty. So this is just to support the decision to use that particular time period. So this is how these elasticities, remember, that represent the proportional change in population growth relative to change in the vital rate. And this is interesting that the greatest effect on population growth comes from any changes to the survival of young reproductive females. We also can see how, in order to explain how to release elasticities, for example, a 10% change in a vital rate will produce a 5% change in population. Other things that we can estimate with these two sex models is, for example, the elasticity of the sex ratio. So this is it's interesting stuff that is going to be very useful when we try to find interaction. Now, what is the maximum increase in population growth if we maximize individually any of these vital rates? Right? So we can see that even survival of the young females is the one with the greatest elasticity. The one that actually produces the maximum increase is fecundity, because the room to improve survival is very small. Right? However, the room to increase fecundity is larger, and as a result, there is a greater potential to increase population. So this is the maximum change necessary to meet that particular recovery target from the U.S. 2.3%, and the maximum that we can see just based on individual scenarios, individual vital rate scenarios, is actually 1.7%. So if we invert the question and we say, well, what is the necessary change in order to stop the growth of the northern residents, for example, right? So in this case, we see how, because the survival of these females has the greatest elasticity, a small change, a small reduction actually produces a halting of the population growth because of the large elasticity. Now, from this, now we look to the past through these life table response experiments. In the past, right, for the northern residents, the fecundity of young reproductive females had the largest contribution to the variance in population growth in the past. For the southern residents, it was actually the survival of young reproductive females that had the largest contribution. So as a form of conclusion here is that we have identified that the greatest benefits to population growth, right, for both populations is actually, it comes from avoiding any kind of reduction in the survival of young reproductive females, or increasing the fecundity of these young reproductive females. So the greatest benefits to land that will occur if we think about management actions that are going to go in this direction. Now, in terms of the demographic difference, when we show that the lower lambda and viability in the southern residents is actually the result of lower viable calf survival, lower fecundity of all reproductive females, greater viability in vital rates, greater proportion of post reproductive females, and a lower average proportion of juveniles that are actually becoming young reproductive females. Now, some of these are going to be related with Chinook abundance, like the fecundity of reproductive females, and that's something that we will see in the next presentation. In that next presentation, we are going to bring the President Kidewey Chinook interaction into the perturbation analysis, and we are going to explore the sensitivity of lambda to Chinook abundance in terms of terminal run and ocean abundance. Most of these results were pretty much in line with what you expect with that kind of life history. Maybe some surprise element would be the small influence to population growth coming from the sex ratio, for example. But I think that is associated with the small variation. Assumptions were, for example, constant survival rates, constant age at first maturity, and also it was the assumption that all the genealogies by bees that they were the true thing. So we wanted, because this is a demographic model in which we want to use really high quality information to make projections, we want to use information that is of the highest quality and that is more representative of the structure of the population in the present.
You're calculating the growth rate, and that really changes the status of the population, you know, relative to the coverage levels and all that stuff. So I'm just wondering, do you just pick an arbitrary starting point based on these arguments, or do you try to somehow take that uncertainty into account?
No, I mean, the compromise was between quality and extent of the time series, and we decided that a minimum would be one generation time, which is 25 years. And as I say, 75% of the individuals today that are alive today in that period. But really, what we are evaluating here is the final question is what is the population role? What we want to see is how interaction with genomics are going to affect that population role. But one thing is clear, that there are some mentions in the panel's report that that the population is clearly increasing. But if we take into consideration the growth in the last generation, it's questionable, right? And as I said, this last 25 years are more representative in terms of demographic trends. They are more representative for the future than the longest
time. I don't believe that. You can pick any point in there and say it's, the closer you get to today, the more representative the growth rates are of the future.
Yeah, but you have to take into account the kind of that history. You're dealing with a minimum that has a longevity of 3 years. Yes, you choose 3 years, right? 10 years. And you are dealing with an individual with a long lifespan, right? So you have to be sure that you select at least one generation. It would be nice if you choose more. I mean, and as I said, that's not the main point of this. The main point is that we want to use the more representative demographic information in order to make inferences about interaction with genome, which will be seen in the next
slide. Andrew, I was wondering, what kind of insights do you have when you look at the dynamics of each of the ponds?
As a question? Consider that. I mean, this is a demographic analysis. These analyses are implemented on the minimum demographic to be screened. Contingent that you can consider, right? And for me, what's an
information?
Yeah, no. There is information. Caswell, for example, brought and Caswell did an analysis of what the influence on the dynamics of the overall population, and they found a small contribution of what's to the overall performance of the I mean, you cannot explain overall performance by analysis of plots. That's what Brown and Caswell found. And as I said, our decision it was to consider the population as the minimum extreme population.
Toxicity in terms of the different loads the two populations have. I don't understand how you don't refer to should have on how to rule that out.
You said toxicity, right?
Yeah, in terms of heavy metal contaminants that are prevalent in this
population. No, but we didn't look at it. I mean, you had a very specific question.
But that would explain the lower spiral.
Yes. I mean, at the end, when we come to conclusions, yes, there can be other factors that we will see that the possibility of shared abundance explaining the difference is going to be very small. So there has to be other factors.
Antonio. Started your time, your analysis in 1987 because you considered there was a difference. These differences in the vital rates going forward relative to what happened in the past, or is it something different about the counting?
You're not necessarily going the vital rates are going higher. It's just that the structure of the population is very different to what was after the live capture. And that will change the vital rate. Some may increase, some may decrease.
But the count prior to 1987 should have the same relative measurement error as consider then starting in 1987, but running your models backward to see whether or not they mimic what you saw from 1977 on. It seems to me that that would provide some evidence for your assumption here that going forward things are a little different than 1977.
Yes, you can do that, but I mean, after seeing how even in spite that some of these anomalies can be associated with measurement error, it's so big, the difference is so big, and you can see how it stabilizes as you progress in the time series, but that it's not an interesting question for me to go back and do that kind of exercise. I mean, you can do it, but we know in advance that those, the population structure back then, it was very different to what is happening. I mean, you can do it, right? But the principle is the question that you have in mind. And the question that we have in mind is to reach the point of seeing the effect of interaction with genome signing.
Yeah, I guess my point is that if you go backwards and find that you end up in 1977 with a much different population count than you actually saw, that would be evidence that your assumption was well taken. So that's obviously the value of the hind count.
Yeah, for us the retrospective evaluation, there is a retrospective evaluation that is focused on that particular period, because it's not the same kind of analysis that you will do with other kind of modeling.
Yeah. So you identified the candidate emails as being something that is currently hampering growth of that population. Did you have a slide that compared the fecundity of the southern resident gathered emails, southern residents to the northern? So is it the last?
How do I move the presentation?
At the bottom here.
Okay. Yeah, it will be here. So there is not only greater variability, but there is an estimate. The same for the cards of one.
So there's not a big difference?
Yeah, there is a statistical difference.
Perhaps. Yeah. So if you look at the lower plot, is that showing that basically the northern residents have 400 places for time?
Yeah, the thing is that actually this slide was meant to not only represent the difference, but also the variation in those variables. The one that is at the bottom represents the CVs, for example. And you can see that in all cases, the southern residents have very proficient variation in those variables than the northern residents. Yeah.
I guess the question is, if you're listening to expected increase in the northern residents would seem to set the standard of what you can expect.
So what is the question?
So you said increasing the fecundity of the young females from the southern residents would help their growth. Is that a realistic expectation? Northern residents, Kennedy is, given that they're probably the best case scenario.
Yeah, but that's an interesting question, because what happens is that insights in terms of what actually can improve to maximize population growth come from, one aspect comes from the prospective analysis, in which we see that any change in the survival of young females is going to have the greatest influence on population growth. But because those survival rates are already pretty high, because greater than 0.9 sometimes, so the benefit is not as much as if you actually maximize fecundity like here. In this case, we're using the upper 95% confidence limit for fecundity. This is based on the observed fecundity, the data that is, I mean, the hard data that we have. So if we use that 95% confidence limit for fecundity, considering as the maximum, then you have a greater increase in population growth than if you use the survival of the young females, even that they have the largest elasticity, and that is just because there is still room for improvement in survival.
Yeah, I think
one
of the other things about the...
Sam Otter, University of Washington. I think one of the important things about comparing the northern residents versus southern residents in this regard is that the southern residents had a huge cull. And if you look across mammals, you see that whenever there's a major deficit in the population like that, you see a very, very rapid rebound, at least in birth rates that we're not seeing. And that's very important. I mean, you look at African elephants from all the poaching. We're seeing populations with 7% population growth right now. Of course, all the adults are being killed. But you do not see that rebound here, and it does not make sense.
Oh, no. What happened is that this analysis is only for increases in individual vital rates, right?
I was saying the data doesn't, it doesn't make sense that there is not a problem. There is a problem because they should be rebounding rapidly. And they're not.
I see.
Antonio, I think your comparative approach is a good one, and I think I'd encourage you to extend it further. You know, northern residents aren't necessarily the standard to which increase can be attained. There are data from further north in the Gulf of Alaska that Craig Matkin has, showing resident was increasing at more than 3% a year since 1984. So it would be useful to put those into the same analysis to really look at what contrasting dynamics might look like for rapidly increasing population.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I guess just to follow up, and I don't know if this can be resolved right now, but with regard to the northern residents, the other aspect of result, you know, your estimates of lambda for the northern residents are much lower than what Eric Ward presented last time. He had estimates of lambda above 3%, well above 3% for the northern residents. So I'm not entirely confused. Is that entirely due to the choice of time period? Or are there other things going on here? There's a lot of different numbers out here. They're all different. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, obviously, the time period. Obviously, the time period is a factor, but I think that it provided different metrics of lambda, and not all of them necessarily are identical to what we are representing here, which is the asymptotic population.
Yeah,
Sam. I think that really all of these give us a nice framework to be cautious about qualifying the southern residents as clearly increasing. For the last 25 years, and that we haven't been increasing. I mean, there is not a significant decline, but if you do this within the frame of conservation biology, population that is at that low population size, and without increasing, or with a constant population growth, we know that is the risks.
Call back to the first workshop, and I think Ward gave a broad overview of the distribution of chocobos worldwide. In that presentation, he mentioned the fact that you tend to see fewer of these things toward the equator and more of them toward the pole. And I'm just questioning why then would you necessarily think the vital rates of the southern residents are going to match, you know, the vital rates of some of these populations that are further north. But if you look at the distribution worldwide,
Yeah, I don't think that the point was to say that the southern basin should have vital rates similar to those of the northern basin. This was just an exercise to show that at least during the last 25 years, the northern residents have a population growth rate that is even below the recovery target for the southern residents, the U.S. recovery target. So that gives us an idea of what could be a feasible recovery target in terms if you want to specify as a metric than the population growth rate. Yeah, but we can incorporate other populations, right, and make this a more interesting study.
Quick question here relating to definitions of terms and Mike's comments. So, is the lambda that you use the same as the lambda that Eric used? Yeah, I know it's a different time period, but the definition of the calculation.
The definition of the calculation is the same. What also differs a little bit is the exact, I guess, demarcations between this. Ages are the size, the stages. So I think I modeled the Kennedy as an age-specific polynomial thing, and Antonio had a young female bin and an old female bin. And survival was essentially the same, so that there's slight differences in how we deal with Kennedy age. That's
the
age. I've looked into which of those, I've looked at how much the vital rates differ depending on your assumption of whether it's continuous or thin model, and there's really not much difference. They're virtually indistinguishable, so not a lot of difference.
So what's your instinct, and what's your surmise about why the vital rates are so different? Just the difference?
Time varies are different. I use 10 more years to see
that.
Yeah, and also, I think that answering that question, we actually run this same kind of analysis with alternative models, and one of those was females only model. And because unless you have a way of quantifying the contribution to a vital rate or population growth to males, right? So usually the female model is going to be exactly the same lambda as the 2-6 model, right? Unless you have some kind of a, now with this new paper that was out about the importance of portion productive females on male survival, for example. So
and
we can quantify that.
Conditions.
And that's why it's important the analysis of transient dynamics. We know that there is a short term in which there is going to be a battle between us and transient dynamics.
Okay, I think we'll have to move on. Thanks very much.